Hello, this is Violet Blue, and you're listening to Open Source Sex. To find out more about me, visit my website, tinynibbles.com, or simply Google my name. I'm back from a few weeks of dealing with the most horrible flu I've had since I was a kid, and I plan on making up for lost time in a big way. While my voice has been healing, I've been accumulating content like crazy, so definitely expect a lot of hot and sweaty action in my RSS feed. You'll also notice that I have some better sound quality going on here with this particular microphone that I have, and quite a few people emailed me suggesting that I get or make a pop filter, and pop filters are very expensive, and making them involves some sort of strange, bizarre fetish ritual with pantyhose. And I won't tell you what I did end up making my pop filter with, but it's not embarrassing, and if it does heighten your experience of listening to my podcast to imagine me with panties over my head, you certainly may do so. At any rate, I hope the sound is better. Speaking of panties, tonight's podcast is about white cotton panties. Or actually, it's about the feel of a tight corset. Or better yet, the way a rubber dress restricts, shines the skin, and sometimes you can see right through it. Would you like it if tonight's podcast was about the nasty things that I do in high-heeled stilettos? It's actually about all of that. Tonight we're going to talk about sexual fetishes. But first, I'd like to share an MP3 sent to me by Minx, whose podcast Polyamory Weekly was one of the first sex podcasts, and she was actually among the first few female podcasters, myself included in that group. She says some pretty flattering things in it about my podcast, which is not why we're going to listen to it, but we are going to listen to it because she does have an interesting story to tell about dealing with iTunes and the press about sex podcasting and about accurate sex information in general, making it a perfect prelude to the content in this podcast. So now let's listen to Super Sexy Minx for a minute.
Hello, Violet Blue. My name is Minx, and I am the host of the Polyamory Weekly podcast, also available through iTunes and also carrying the very naughty explicit label. Like your own podcast, mine has been mentioned in quite a few articles, usually sporting some title containing the word porn or prurient or my personal favorite, porn casting, and usually asking the question, what is Apple going to do about this, or is Apple peddling porn, or something to that effect. And I'm an avid listener of Open Source Sex. I look forward to it every week. And in the last show, when you mentioned another article, perhaps it was a CDA, with respect to talking about sexual-oriented podcasts such as yours and mine, you used the word democratic to describe sex ed. And that really struck a chord with me, and so I talked about it on my own show, because you're absolutely right. I mean, in the past, sexual education has been limited to what our parents told us or what we heard in school, or God has forbid, what our friends told us, which was, you know, always stunningly accurate. And you're absolutely right that now, you know, people have the choice of what they listen to. They can find the information that fits and syncs with their own morals and values in life. And hopefully that information is accurate. And I personally am very thankful for podcasts like yours, which, you know, have excellent information, always a lot of food for thought. I'm usually chuckling when my podcast is mentioned in articles like those, because only a very small percentage of the time do we actually talk about sex. 90% of the time we're talking about honest communication and openness within relationships, and of course we would never want anyone under 18 to find out about secrets like that. Anyway, just wanted to tell you thank you so much for talking about it, for using the word democratic to give me that perspective, and definitely, definitely keep up the fabulously good work on open source sex. Thanks very much.
What a sexy voice she has, and great sound quality, and a damn fine podcast, I might add. If you're wondering what polyamory is, because her podcast is called Polyamory Weekly, in a nutshell, basically it's about relationship-based non-monogamous sex. And I know that I'm glossing over a lot of really important details and definitions by saying that, but that's in a nutshell. You can find her at livejournal.com/users/polyweekly, or you can just Google Polyamory Weekly and you'll find a couple of different sites related to the podcast, and also Grey Dancers Rope Weekly, which they are somehow connected. At any rate, tonight sexual fetishes are on the menu. what they are, and how to make the most of them to get off and get off right. You see, I regularly lecture about fetishes to the students at San Francisco Sex Information, which is local, but it's also the nation's only Ask Anything Sex hotline. You can find them at sfsi.org. It's really amazing. When I talk to the students about fetishes in general and how to answer questions about them from callers, I also do something for these students I seldom do when I lecture, which is I talk about my own personal relationship to fetishes, and I share my first fetish experience. So I'll tell you about that before I get started so you can have an idea as to what the students at this amazing, amazing sex hotline get to hear when I go up there. Essentially, okay, here's the thing to know about fetishes, and there are a lot of common misconceptions about them. One of them is that you get hit on the head and you have a fetish, or you know, people who have fetishes for granny's underpants get them because they had a traumatic sexual experience while seeing granny in her underpants, or something equally contrived, actually, and that's not the case at all. There really is no explanation as to where fetishes come from. Some fetishists can, and fetishists in general are very articulate, by the way. Quite a few of them can tell you where they think their fetish came from. Many can't. And that sort of came up for me because I found it at a certain point. I was working in a used clothing store in Upper Haight, which was just a totally miserable job. But I worked with a bunch of really cool queer kids and drag queens and stuff like that. And I started really getting into corsets for some reason. When corsets would come in to the store, I would hoard them, or I would buy them, or I'd even steal them. And one day I stole a corset from the store and brought it home. And my boyfriend at the time was totally not into fetish and thought, you know, people who wore rubber and were into whips and chains were freaks and something was wrong with them, which, I mean, obviously, that relationship was going to have to come to a stormy end at some point. But so I brought this corset home and I waited until my boyfriend at the time was out at band practice and somehow got into this big old-fashioned corset by myself. And if you can imagine, in a San Francisco Victorian in Upper Haight, a girl taking off all of her clothes and then squeezing into a corset and literally using a door handle on the bedroom door to try and get the corset laces as tight as possible. And finally, I got into this corset and I got it really tight and I sort of laid back on the bed so I could breathe because I couldn't really breathe. And the best way that I can relate the feeling that I had next was to say that it was like a light switch turning on. And I was instantly aroused, more aroused instantly than I think I'd ever been. And I completely understood what guys meant by getting an instant hard on, because that's basically what I had. All of a sudden, everything was completely turned on. And I just couldn't help myself. I had to masturbate immediately on the spot. And I did. And of course, I never told my boyfriend about it, and I never shared it with him. And I hid the corset in a closet. And that was, I mean, you know, there were never any corsets in my childhood. I never saw an image of a corset until I was older. I mean, it just, I don't know where it came from, but there it is. So keep that in mind when you think about fetishes. So let me tell you now the rest of what I tell the students when I give my lecture, once they're all hot and bothered and excited seeing me stand in front of them with usually a pair of nice fetish shoes on telling this story. Then I tell them more about fetishes. Because besides publications from fetish communities, which you can find online, little has been written about fetishes without sensationalizing them as bizarre, strange, and deviant practices held by only a handful of people. This is despite the numerous conventions, well-attended events, magazines, and news groups with hundreds of thousands of subscribers, and fetish fashion boutiques all over the world. In many people's minds, people with fetishes occupy the freakish end of the gene pool when it comes to sex, and politely consider fetishes a place where people with far-out sexual tastes can go to get their needs satisfied. The truth is, when you look at cultural stereotypes of what constitutes normal sex, pretty much anything you do outside of married, heterosexual, missionary intercourse can be considered deviant. In reality, everyone has a fetish of one kind or another, a sexual position, eye or hair color, or favorite body part. When you think about fetishes in this light, it seems as though sexual fetishes are standard issue, doled out to everyone with sex organs and a brain. And they are. But I'll admit that sometimes it's fun to explore the more otherworldly sexual obsessions of people who seek out sexual experiences that I consider strange or puzzling, such as human ponies, balloon popping, or bug crushing. Nowhere in the world of sexual expression do humans become more playful and their tastes unpredictable than in the world of sex classified as fetish. For instance, when someone's into human animals or animal training, it can mean a lot of different things, actually. Ponies, dogs, cats, farm animals. There are thousands of fetishists worldwide who relish their lives as erotic animals. I'm not talking about bestiality. I'm talking about humans who spend their time or a certain amount of time as the particular animal that they fetishize. In their relationships with people who participate in their sexual behavior with them, they are groomed, they are trained to perform, they receive behavioral punishment, they are quote-unquote bred with other animals, and outfitted with costumes and gear to make them more like the animal that they identify as. Balloon popping, the other one I mentioned, they call themselves, by and large, lunars, and lunars have a number of ways they like to get off. They might like putting pictures of clothed women. They might like pictures of clothed women popping balloons. They might like to hump large balloons until they pop. They might just like to watch sexy people blow up balloons, or even desire to be encased in a balloon, a large balloon. If you want to know what I'm talking about, a nice gallery to take a look at is lunars.com, and that's LOONERZ.com. Bug crushing. You're like, what is that? Crushing is a pretty significant fetish. Crushing in general is when one fetishizes the act of something or someone being crushed, much of which takes place in the imagination. High heels crushing bugs, hands, feet, and tiny people are all popular. People into crushing might like to watch or pretend to be the hapless creature being crushed. Because of a case involving a man who created and sold videos depicting small animals being crushed, he was arrested on animal cruelty charges. In 1998, U.S. Congress banned interstate trafficking of crush videos. In 2002, Britain followed suit, sending four crush video makers, one male and three females, to jail. When someone has a sexual fetish, it means that for them, an object, manner of dress, or specific scenario takes on a magical quality, has deeper meaning, and becomes part of their favorite sexual experiences, or are sometimes absolutely required for satisfying sexual release. The item or predicament is that person's most reliable sex toy, and as we all know when it comes to coming, when you find something that works, you mine it for all it's worth. Sometimes there's a rational explanation as to why a particular person is attracted to a certain pair of shoes, wearing restrictive and beautiful corsets, watching women smoke in the nude, or pop balloons during sex. Though, like I said earlier, more often than not, there's no explanation for the magnetic pull of a fetish. We have many culturally accepted explanations as to why big boobs and huge cocks are fashionable or even everyday sexual fetishes, but people with fetishes outside the norm tend to get stigmatized. This is tough to cope with when you or your lover has a fetish, or especially an unusual fetish. Fetishes do not discriminate based on gender, race, or class. The fetishes themselves do not choose to be good or bad, to be owned by men or women. There are female fetishists who eroticize the same objects in the same manner as do men, though we tend to see more of the male perspective on the web and in magazines. That's because culturally, men are considered the primary consumers of pornography and thus sexuality. Hopefully that's changing as we speak. But in any case, it seems that gender isn't a reliable explanation for fetishes. But like I said earlier, no one gets hit on the head like in the movies and wakes up with a fetish. Clinical explanations about fetishes evolving from childhood experiences and Freudian experiences with parental nudity all reek with the same contrived stink as theories about homosexuality from the 1950s. Sometimes there is no rational explanation for having a particular fetish, though fetishists themselves are generally a very articulate group, and if you asked an individual in a Yahoo group or chat room, I bet you'd get an interesting earful. Apart from amputee, giantess, and other fetishes, fashion and rubber fetishists are a breed apart. Fetish fashion and its refined connoisseurs make a couture designer's obsession seem trite. Leather, shiny rubber, PVC, plastics, liquid latex, corsets, stilettos, and fantastically high heels, stockings, and more all occupy this highly sexualized realm of style. Fetish fashion is a huge worldwide industry, especially in North America and Europe, and the sexuality inherent in fetish blends seamlessly with SM practices and Gothic style, and it's common to see fetish events that are also SM play parties. For the moneyed rubberist, corset wearer, or hardcore human-animal fetishist, such as pony or dog, the fashion has become a fetish unto itself. The women at San Francisco's renowned Corset House Dark Garden have told me tales of fetishists who have custom-made rubber suits for every imaginable occasion, including a rubber undertaker's suit. Fetish balls and conventions are typically high-fashion events with strict dress codes that embrace a wide variety of fetishes, as long as they dress to the nines. In general, people with fetishes are articulate, well-read, computer-savvy, have theories about their fetishes, and possess a very distinct sense of self-control about the way they conduct their sex lives. Many feel they cannot share their fetish with their loved ones, and discreetly set aside a time and place in their lives where they can find fulfilling release with their fetish. Away, of course, from the risk of offending people that they care about. Most fetishists who visit professional fantasy makers, such as dominatrixes, have a healthy understanding of negotiation and boundaries. If not, they learn the hard way. And SM is only part of certain fetishes, too, not all, and also keep in mind that professional BDSM does not ever include sex. While many fetishists have healthy, happy sex lives with their lovers in the style of sex that their lovers prefer, many must partition off their sexual fetishes from their relationships. It can feel isolating to the fetishist, but not worth the risk of offending or losing a loved one. We already live in a culture that sees masturbation, a healthy, normal sexual practice, as shameful and degrading. So it's no surprise that people with fetishes are afraid to share them with their lovers. Single fetishists can network over the internet, finding others who share their tastes, though it is quite hit and miss. Like a night out at a singles bar, dating can be a routine of disappointment, and they are compelled to gamble, dating people that they are attracted to, but who may accept, reject, embrace, or run screaming should they discover their lover's fetish. Opening up in a relationship and telling someone you don't want to lose about your innermost sexual workings is so frightening, many don't risk it. To tell someone about a fetish is to risk shame, loss, rejection, and heartbreak. Fetishes, by and large, and I'm generalizing here like I did with polyamory, are usually harmless, unless they become a secret that makes you feel isolated in a relationship. Fetishes seem to come from the id's sexually frivolous side, and because they seldom have explanations, fetishes are not chosen, they cannot also be cured or made to just go away. In relationships, fetishes can cause problems when the fetishist feels bad about keeping a secret, when the fetish interferes with other parts of the fetishist's life, and when the fetishist's partner finds the fetish disturbing, distasteful, or worse, sees the fetish as competition. Some people with fetishes can't come unless their fetish is involved somehow, and that can make a lover feel inadequate. A little while back, I got an email from a Tiny Nibbles reader, a woman who read a little bit of what I wrote about sexual fetishes and confessed to me that her boyfriend had just told her that he has a fetish too, and she didn't really know what to do with it. And interestingly, that fetish was for pumas. And by pumas, I mean puma sneakers. So, of course, I wrote her back, asking her to find out as many details as possible about what her lover liked about the pumas, whether, you know, she was to wear them, or if it was new pumas, old pumas, just as many details as possible so that she could try and figure out how to incorporate very specialized taste in shoes into their sex life. So if you or your lover is having has a fetish, and you're having a difficult time understanding how it can work into your shared sex lives, try to talk about it. If it's your fetish, be sure to let your lover know up front that your fetish is the only surprise you've got up your sleeve, because they might be wondering what else you're hiding from them. And be careful to pay equal attention to your lover as you do your fetish when you have shared sexual encounters. Reassure your lover that you are more aroused by them than the fetish, because that will be one of the number one concerns on their mind, i.e., do I need to compete with the pumas? Finding out your partner has a fetish might seem upsetting at first. If this is you, it's easy to wonder if your lover has been keeping sexual secrets all along. But remember that at this point, your lover's entrusting you with one of their scariest and most sexually exciting secrets. Understand that his or her arousal by a certain object or circumstance is in no way a substitute for you. And in fact, your lover feels that the addition of you to the fetish dynamic will make them feel sexually complete. And just might make for some pretty hot sex that you both can enjoy. Don't see the fetish as a rival, or something you have to compete with for love and affection. Instead, deviously use the fetish as a tool to make their sexual experiences with you the most pivotal they've ever had with anyone. A fetish shared by two, after all, is a very specialized sex toy, one you simply cannot buy at the local sex toy boutique. Finding out your lover has a fetish can be like having them give you a golden key to their fantasy life. And with that, most people probably don't know they have a fetish for certain objects, devices, or scenarios. But those who are make it easy to get the most out of steamy sexual encounters you can have with a fetish. Of course, due to the very nature of sexual fetishes, details will be specific to the nuances of the fetish, which I'll talk about in another podcast. In the meantime, here are a few guidelines for hot fetish sex to get you started. If you're the fetishist, explain exactly what turns you on about your fetish so your lover can utilize the information to the utmost. Try to split your attention between your fetish and your lover. Err on the side of giving him or her more attention than the fetish. Do not behave selfishly. Do everything you can think of to avoid having your lover feel threatened by your fetish. Trade sexual pleasure for your fetish. Get your partner off in whatever way they like best. Then you can enjoy the fetish without feeling guilty that they're not getting off. Be a good lover. That's what it's all about. Your fetish is just another sex toy for you both to share. Be very supportive. Tell your lover how hot they look, how aroused they make you feel, and afterward tell them things that they did that made you see the stars. And also, remember that you're not alone. Your lover wants to be there for you. They may just not understand how. And also, there are support groups and message boards for virtually every fetish community on the internet, no matter how obscure you think your fetish is. If you want tips about having sex with your lover and their fetish, start with finding out in as specific detail as you can what turns him or her on about the fetish item, object, or predicament. Ask questions like, do you rub the puma all over his body? Do you wear the puma? Do you make him eat out of the puma? Or do you crush things with the puma? Have your fetishist show you what he or she likes to do when they masturbate. Let your lover know whether or not the fetish turns you on and try to be honest. If it doesn't, be prepared to tell them how you expect him or her to bring you to pleasure in exchange. Don't let it be a one-way street or you will feel resentful. You will hate pumas. Hate them. If you're in a love relationship, actively seek out elements of the fetish that excite or arouse you. You may discover you like having so much power and control over your partner's orgasm that you get turned on by sitting in cheesecake, wearing pumas, or just in general that you like seeing them get so sexually worked up by what you're doing. With that, push it. Do they get wet or hard at the sight of rubber panties? Tease them with the panties, taunt them, rub the panties in their face. Make their sexual arousal as excruciating as possible before you give them what they want. Work it. Fetishists who like having something rubbed on them can be instructed not to masturbate while you tease them with the object, and then you can take your leisurely time masturbating them to orgasm. Make them suffer. Know your limits and boundaries. If the fetish is too strange for your taste or your comfort level, tell your lover and then talk about it. Don't ever do anything you feel uncomfortable about or might feel bad about later, no matter how much you love this person. If it's not working for you, don't force it. Some fetishes will only involve images, photographs, or videos, so keep that in mind if you're worried about what a giantess or amputee fetish might involve. Looking at or watching these videos together is a great opportunity for handjobs or fun sexual positions. Be open to new and unusual experiences and be playful about sex. It's like being able to play like a kid all over again, but between consenting adults who can think of sexy twists and turns to make playtime red hot. And finally, know that you're not alone, not by a long shot. There are thousands of fetishists out there, possibly thousands with your lover's fetish, and you can seek out web communities and message boards for support. And if you're one of many people whose lovers have fetishes, the thing you're going to want to do also is network with other fetishists and their partners as well, so you can find out what they're dealing with, what they're going through, and they may even have some fun, helpful suggestions for where you might find things. Whether you want to find support from others in a similar relationship or get more ideas to make your fetish encounters erotically explosive, you can find chat rooms, message boards, websites, and web rings all dedicated to an astounding array of fetishes on the internet. If you don't have web access, it is a bit tougher to find community. But adult magazines found in porn shops cater to a myriad of fetishes, and in the back pages of many adult magazines you'll find mail order companies that carry a variety of fetish products and mail order catalogs for more magazines, books, and videos. But for the fetishists and their lovers who have internet connections, the world is your rubber-encased fetish oyster. As of this podcast, web portal Yahoo is the most popular place for chat groups about different fetishes, and they have over 2,500 groups dedicated to fetish-related topics, with hundreds, sometimes thousands of members in each group, all emailing, exchanging links, and communicating about their fetishes and lives. So just go to yahoo.com and click on groups, then type in the fetish you'd like to connect with others about. I'm also going to put a couple of links up with this podcast on my Libsyn account and also on my Tiny Nibbles audio page. You won't see them in iTunes if you're an iTunes person, but you will see them if you go to either of my sites. They might be helpful for you. If you want to learn even more about fetishes and having fun fetish sex, check out my book, The Ultimate Guide to Sexual Fantasy, which has a lot more information about this and a variety of other sexual fantasies and how to talk about them, make them hot, and do a whole lot of crazy fun stuff in the bedroom and out of the bedroom, too. Visit tinynibbles.com for archives of this podcast on my audio page and info about upcoming shows. This, by the way, was known as the Missing Podcast, podcast number 5, which was lost when I left the extremely unreliable risen.com or risen.net, and which I think they have both URLs, but I left them because they're super unreliable, and the douchebag that runs the site hijacked my feed, and I think that he did so because of religious reasons, now that I've gone back and see what kind of work he's done. But anyway, number 5 got lost. It was this one. It was my lecture on fetishes. So if you're one of the people who have emailed me going, where the hell is number 5? What can I do? Where can I find it? What's going on? This was it. In the meantime, like I said earlier in the podcast, I've been sick, so I've just been accumulating content like crazy. So the next couple of podcasts are going to come fast and furious, like a good round of really hot sex. And there's going to be a lot of erotica. People have been sending me books, short stories, a variety of different things, and I have a couple of interviews lined up as well. So I can promise you that the next show will feature some hot, hot erotica that I promise will burn a hole in your iPod or your pants. Thanks for listening to Open Source Sex with me, Violet Blue.